There's something squally around here.
Could be you,
Jack. You still don't get it, do you?
Brett Davis.
A finder! That's what he does! That's all he does! You can't stop!
Brett Davis.
Yes, that is right, boys and girls. Did you think I was gone? Did you think I was gone? Not so fast, as the venerable Lee Corso would say. Welcome into the premiere episode of the Fredcast.
Fred Davis, you may know me from Sports Radio. What's that station called? I don't remember what that station's called anymore. Either way, you may remember me from my time on a local radio station here in town. Well, guess what? Your boy's back on the podcast tip, doing his thing, or at least trying to anyway. Like I said, this is the initial podcast. I like to call it the Fredcast. Real original title for those of you that are of that variety anyway. So, I'm Fred Davis. This is the Fredcast, and this is a brand new experience for me. I've never done anything quite like this before. I've always done it from a radio perspective, and I've always usually had a partner. This takes me back to my days in Big Money, Texas, actually, when I was doing a show by myself for the first, I think I did a show. Probably for the first month by myself, and I had my boy T.A. Talbert Avery help me out, and I've been rolling ever since with a partner. So bear with me, ladies and gentlemen. Like I said, going to go do this thing, this podcast thing, and I'm going to lay it out like a radio show because you know what? I don't have any other experience with a podcast, and so I guess the thing about the podcast is it's basically like a blog, except rather than writing, I'm just talking. And so you guys all know I do write a little bit from back in the day, so now we're going to do this thing podcast style. So let's go ahead and lay this out as to what this program is going to be all about tonight. Like I said, it's the initial Fredcast, so bear with me, boys and girls, all right, because this is going to be a work in progress. But here's how the Fredcast is going to work. Listen, the topics right now, we've got the draft. It's right around the corner. It seems like we've been talking about the draft forever and a day. And I'll be honest with you guys, okay? Since my, I guess you could say farewell, for lack of a better term, I really haven't paid a whole lot of attention to draft talk for the most part, okay? I know this much. Last I checked, the Texans do have the first pick in the 2014 NFL draft. I know that there's one gentleman in particular from an athletic standpoint, one Mr. Jadeveon Clowney, that seems to be getting all the love right now. For anybody that's listened to me, and if you have listened to local sports radio here in the last couple weeks, you heard me this past Tuesday on the Blitz filling in for A.J. Hoffman. I had a chance to sit in with one Mr. Fred Fowler on 97.5, like I said, this past Tuesday, and so I got a chance to kind of share some of my thoughts as far as who I think the Texans should take. Number one, we're going to get into that in just a little bit, but again, we're going to talk some Texans. We're going to talk a little Texans today, all right, who I think the Texans should take with the number one pick. And basically that's going to be kind of the impetus for, you know, when you look at this Texans football team, and we know there's a lot of holes on this particular Texans football team. And after the season they had this past year, 2-14, nobody in their right mind thought the Texans were going to go 2-14. I remember talking about it last year on the radio, and we joked about it ever so briefly. Is there any chance that the Texans could possibly not make the playoffs? I mean, that was the thing. We thought the Texans were going to be a surefire Super Bowl contender. Did we not? I mean, for the most part, I mean, yeah, I know we had some questions about one Mr. Matt Schaub. We saw how that played out. But hey, at the very least, he did have a historic season last year, so there's something to be said for that. And kudos to our boy Rick Smith, who was able, God willing, was able to get a trade done. And of course, it's a surprise to anybody that the Raiders were the team that went ahead and did that. So, the you know, you eat some cap space right now. You go ahead and you bite the bullet on that. But at the very least, you get a 6th-round pick for it. And after what you saw this last year with the 6th-round pick, the one thing we've seen with the Texans, when you're not picking the Sam Montgomerys or the Brennan Williams of the world, I mean, if David Quisenberry doesn't get hurt, our boy Alan Bonner, who, yes, we all know, he can sell cereal, David Quisenberry was going to be a solid offensive line player last year, would have been a solid member of that offensive line. I think he's going to be probably your left guard, replacing Wade Smith, who last year just had an abysmal year. Bad knees, whatever the case was, Wade Smith, and really you could say that he had kind of a rough 2 years, because I didn't think the year before that he was all that spectacular, but at the very least, you know, he had 2 years ago that he was just spectacular. Last year, not so much. Year before that, really not so much. So you got David Quisenberry on that left. It should be taking that left guard spot. He was a 6th-round pick. My boy Ryan Griffin, who I thought had a pretty dadgum good year last year, He was a sixth round pick. So when, you take those guys into consideration, you've had some of these. Oh, and then don't forget our boy, Chris Jones, who was a sixth round draft pick. All right. And, you cut him last year in favor of guys like Sonic Sam Montgomery, who's no longer on the basketball team. But what our boy Chris Jones from Bowling Green do? Oh, that's right. All he did was get cut. He went to the Tampa Bay, had a, was with them for a hot minute, and then goes and plays starter minutes and was a significant contributor to that New England Patriot team. And he looks to be looks like he's going to be a staple of that defensive line for at least the next 7 to 8 years on that New England Patriot team. So you can get good depth in the sixth round. And I'm okay with them getting a sixth round pick. You basically got something for nothing. I'm okay with that all day, every day. But again, we go back to what this atrocity of a season was last year for the Houston Texans. Now, before we get into the Houston Texans and who I think they should take number one, and anybody that's listening to me, okay, if you guys follow me on Twitter, TheFreddyD, you know who I feel the Texans should take. We know we should take a quarterback. I'll get to that in just a second. We're also going to get into some Rockets as well. I thought the playoffs started today. The Rockets, they're going to start their off-season tomorrow. Excuse me, their off-season. Jiminy Christmas. Can you guys tell that I'm a little rusty at this, and this is kind of a new thing for me? Rockets are going to start their postseason push tomorrow against the Portland Trail Blazers. A lot of folks are thinking they're going to make a deep run. I'll give you my thoughts on what I expect the Rockets to do in this postseason. And when you've watched so far, 8:38? It's 20:38 for those of you operating on the 24-hour clock. The Eastern Conference, which has been just a tram sham mockery all season long. The free fall of the Indianapolis Pacers continues, okay? They just got beat by, yes, that's right, the Atlanta Hawks. They go down. They're down 0-1. I would not be at all surprised to see them lose this first round series. The Eastern Conference is this, all right? It's going to be the Miami Heat. I understand that maybe they took half the season off, all right? But last I checked, you still got LeBron. You're going to have Dwayne Wade. He sat half the year anyway. You got Chris Bosh, who, yes, he looks like an alien, all right? We don't know where he's from, but the guy can play some ball. You got my boy Mario Chalmers. You've got some depth along that front line. I think Eric Spoelstra might be one of the most underrated head coaches in the National Basketball Association. So they're going to make it out of the Eastern Conference. The question is going to be, who are they going to face in the Western Conference? I'll get to that in just a second. And then, of course, it wouldn't be a Fred cast if I didn't get into a little pop culture, just something, off the beaten path when it comes to sports. I'm on this, okay, like I said, so I went on kind of a anti-sports just boycott, I just was anti-sports for a while, okay? I worked for a political campaign for a little while after my time ended at the radio station. So I got into that, and I really didn't feel like covering a whole lot of sports. I didn't feel like watching a whole lot of sports. So I've been taking a little bit of a hiatus, if you will. And so in the meantime, I started watching a lot of CNBC. And we all know American Greed might be probably okay. American Greed's a great show, is it not? All right, but the problem with American Greed is it's kind of going the way of First 48 in the sense that it's great for the first two or three seasons. You're seeing stuff you haven't heard before. Stacey Keach, Sergeant Stadenko from the Cheech and Chong movies does a great job narrating American Greed, but you can only talk about Ponzi schemes so many times, all right? Because that's essentially all American Greed is. Every single show is pretty much a guy running a Ponzi scheme, lived ridiculously, and then finally it all came crashing down, and then, we hear from the investors and what have you, and they're all sad and crying and what have you. And we get it, okay? We get it, all right? You gave your life savings, and then, when it came time to collect, this guy's driving a Rolls Royce, with chrome-plated wheels and gold door handles, and oh, by the way, you're not getting your payments. So I'm watching CNBC. I'm a big fan of The Profit, love The Shark Tank, but there's a new show on there that's been on there for the last 2 or 3 months called Money Talks, and I got a few thoughts on that show that I want to get into towards the very end of the podcast. So this is the Fredcast. Let's get this thing started again. This is the Fredcast presented by CTD Labs. I want to give a shout out to my boy Kenny Matthews for help making this possible. CTD Labs, go to their website, ctdlabs.com. If you guys listen to the program back in the day, Kenny would come on the program, talk a little bit about what they're all about. As far as you guys know, I'm a fitness guy. I love to work out, and they've got some of the best products around when it comes to just, staying in shape, stuff that's going to help you stay in shape. It's going to help you with your workouts. It's going to help you maintain some sort of balance. Listen, diet we all know is huge, but you're going to have to take supplements. That's just the nature of the beast. It's all about what kind of supplements are you going to take. Check out my boy CT at CTD Labs. That's their Twitter account, or like I said, go to their website, ctdlabs.com. You can also go to Nutrition Depot and pick up some of their items as well. I'm a big fan of the Noxy Pro. I just got back on the Tester Dex as well. And for all of you guys out there that have been taking, you know, if you've been taking pre-workouts forever in a day, all right, which I know a lot of you have, get yourself some Adrenal Reset. You got to go do that. I'm telling you right now, I was taking pre-workout for, it seemed like, years on end, okay, to the point where I was taking like half a bottle to, in order, just, you know, half the canister to get a buzz. Well, you take some Adrenal Reset, take about a week or two off of your actual pre-workout, take some Adrenal Reset, 2 to 3 weeks. I promise you, you get back on that stuff again, you'll be back in action like you never took it in the first place. So CTD Labs, go check it out. Like I said, they're making this podcast possible. So again, shout out to my boy Kenny Matthews. All right, so let's get down to business, shall we? All right, Texans, number one pick. Let's make it, just for those of you that don't know, Johnny Manziel. All right, it's a no-brainer to me. Now, I understand a lot of the concerns, and me and my boy Freddie Fowler got into it, and it was actually rather chippy, if you will, because I think Fred took umbrage to my support of Johnny Manziel as your number one pick. And I understand what some of the concerns are when it comes to Johnny Manziel as your number one pick. 5'11" and what, 3/4", 205, 207 pounds. Not the greatest measurables in the world, and, you know, he doesn't have that prototypical NFL size that you want in your quarterback. Spare me the, he's not an Andrew Luck. Spare me the, he's not a RG3. Fred and I got into this, and I got into some Twitter debates with some people, and apparently, according to some, I don't watch the NFL because I think I would take Russell Wilson over RG3 if you reset the draft over again. Tell me this much. If you go back to 2 years ago when, I guess it would have been, what, 12, what are we in, 2014? So I guess it would have been, what, the 2011, 2012 draft? 2012, when Andrew Luck went number one. That was a no-brainer, all right? And anybody with, I mean, a blind man that had never seen football before in his life, that didn't even know what football, an alien, could have picked Andrew Luck to be your number one pick. Why? Because it was a no-brainer. This guy had everything you wanted. He was Peyton Manning with athleticism. That's a scary thought. And over the last 2 years, and trust me, being a Chiefs fan, you guys all know, being Texan fans, you've seen what Andrew Luck is capable of. That team's really not that great. All right. But you've got Andrew Luck. And that alone is going to win you football games because that guy just makes things happen. All right. Now, I'm not saying that RG3 is not a good quarterback, because you look at what he did his rookie year versus what he's had to do his second year. Now, granted, he had the injury problem and never quite seemed to be the same guy. That entire Redskins team was a debacle from the get-go. I mean, the offseason was a joke. And again, if you listen to our show back in the day, you knew that, you know, neither me nor my partner were really that big on RG3. There was just something about his personality, just something about the way he carried himself. He's a quote unquote team guy, but listen, when you got to do a documentary on how hard you work against all odds, whatever the hell that documentary was called, I mean, this guy makes a documentary about rehabbing from an ACL injury. Now, I'm guessing that most of you that are listening to this podcast, and thank you if you are, you know that in professional sports, guys are going to blow out their knees. So that's just part of the gig. And so part of blowing out your knee is, guess what? You rehab from it. So RG3 putting together a documentary on his rehab, I'm sorry, but that just seemed a little bit much to me. All right. Do I need a documentary to show me that yes, RG3 is more serious than everybody else because he's documenting his rehab, because that's how hard he, you know, that's how much it means to him that he's going to document what he's doing. We need to see a behind the scenes of just how hard he's working. Give me a break. Okay. I don't need that. All right. Did we see what, Adrian Peterson was doing 2 years ago? Now, granted, we probably missed the HGH shots that he was getting, because I would have liked to have seen that. I mean, come on, you kidding me? But when it comes to RG3, I like him as a quarterback. I'm not saying he's not a good quarterback, but for what you give me on the field, off the field, and kind of all the little chatter that you heard about RG3, him being a me guy, me first guy, all about him. I mean, and again, having worked with professional athletes, you know, I've yet to hear of anybody say, yeah, the dad gets to come into the locker room after a game like RG3's did. Russell Wilson, on the other hand, and I know a lot of people say, oh, well, the offense was built around him. He's got a running game. He's got a, you know, he's got an incredible defense. There's no question about that, all right? I mean, no one's denying that. But can anybody tell me the last time a team that won a Super Bowl didn't have a good defense, didn't have some semblance of a running game. All right. I mean, it just seems to me that, you know, we don't want to give Russell Wilson credit because he had such a dominant defense and because he had such a good running game. You know, we forget that guy was getting pounded early on in the year. But the thing about Russell Wilson is while his numbers weren't fantastic, and no one's going to put him up there, you know, number-wise with the Andrew Lucks, with the Peyton Mannings, with the Tom Brady's. But any Texan fan, remember week four? Yeah, let's forget about the whole thing that happened with our boy Matt Schaub throwing the pick six to Richard Sherman for, what, the 17th week in a row. But anybody that watched that game in the second half, the Texans were balling in that first half. But what happened in the second half? Russell Wilson made plays when he had to. All right, and that's the difference. Is he going to turn into a more complete passer? I don't think there's any question about it. And anybody that's going to deny that he didn't make some really clutch throws in that Super Bowl, and yes, they had a pretty good cushion pretty much the entire game. Defense played well. Special teams played well. Okay, I mean, that was just an all-around great performance. All right, but at the same time, he made some really good throws in that football game. So, you know, if you reset the draft from 2 years ago, I'm taking Andrew Luck number one, I'm taking Russell Wilson number two, and you're probably taking RG3 number three. All right. So all that in your background, I think when you look at what Russell Wilson has been able to do with what's been put around him, I don't think there's any reason why you don't go with Johnny Manziel with that first pick. Size aside, okay? And part of the reason why I think Johnny Manziel is such a good pick for the Houston Texans. One, if you take Jadeveon Clowney first pick, all right? Let me ask you guys this. Do you feel, first and foremost, are you going to be excited if Jadeveon Clowney is your number one pick? Are you going to be, I mean, ask yourself that question right now. Are you going to be excited if Jadeveon Clowney is your first pick? All right? Because, yeah, he might get to the quarterback. All right? And there's a good chance he's going to get to the quarterback. But is he going to get to the quarterback with the regularity, all right, that's going to really, truly impact the game, play in, play out? All right? You've got the best defensive player in the National Football League already on your team in J.J. Watt. And your team went 2-14 last year. Think about that. You have the best player, and so I know a lot of people are saying, "Well, you know, you put him on the other side. You got Jadeveon Clowney. Now you got J.J. Watt, and so now you got to factor in both of these guys. It's going to be a nightmare for offensive coaches." This is the NFL, all right. They're gonna figure things out. Now, are they gonna get to guys eventually? No. I mean, when you put a Jadeveon Clowney on one side, you put a J.J. Watt on the other, are they gonna finally get to the quarterback? I mean, are they gonna wreak havoc? No question about it. All right, there's going to be times where they will, but what does that do on the offensive side? Okay, well, some people are saying, well, you know what, you go 6-10, and then you go ahead and you get a quarterback in next year's draft, or you get Jadeveon Clowney with the number one pick, and then you go ahead and get a quarterback in the second round, or you get one in the third round. Is there anybody in this draft that I see right now, quarterback wise? And I'm not Mel Kiper, I'm not Todd McShay, I'm not Greg Cosell, who's broken down hours and hours and hours of footage. All right. I'm just going off of what I've seen and what I've heard and what I've talked to with other guys that know Johnny Manziel. And I go back to this time and time again. Dat Nguyen, and talked to him a while back, swears by Johnny Manziel. All right. Now, granted, a lot of people are going to say, well, what do you expect, Fred? He's an A&M guy. Of course he's going to be a Johnny Manziel guy. Well, the one thing that you continuously hear about, and tweet at me after the show's over, at the Freddie D. You can hit me on my Facebook too, Fred Davis, because I'm gonna post it on both. Somebody please explain to me where you've ever heard that Johnny Manziel, we know what his extracurriculars are about. All right, we understand that. We understand that, you know, in his off season between winning the Heisman and then going back to his redshirt sophomore year of college, he wilded out. He wilded out. There's no question about it. But his numbers improved his sophomore year. We never heard any complaints from guys on his own football team that said he's a bad teammate. We never heard of any problems of him being a quote-unquote locker room cancer or me first guy. All we've heard about Johnny Manziel is he's a football guy first, and he likes to enjoy himself off the field. Tell me how many guys probably aren't like that, that love to play football first and love to do their thing off the field. Okay. Difference is they're not a Heisman winning quarterback for an SEC football team that was having its first year and literally burst onto the scene. I would love to know or get people's thoughts on how good would Texas A&M have been if they wouldn't have Johnny Manziel. Nobody outside of College Station, nobody outside of A&M, backers, supporters, alumni, thought A&M was going to do much in the SEC. I mean, people will pan that move. Yeah, you're going to make more money. Yes, you're going to get out of Texas's shadow, and you could finally kind of chart your own path a little bit in the SEC. But you were never, I mean, you were a meddling team in the Big 12. I mean, you were a good, not great team in the Big 12, and no one's going to get the Big 12 confused with the SEC. All right? I mean, the SEC has been the preeminent football conference of the BC era, and that's a fact. So for him to step in and do the things he did in the first 2 years, all right, you balled against Alabama. Yeah, you struggled against LSU. Yes, you struggled against Missouri. All right, I'll give him that. But, you know, and part of the problem is, and Greg Cosell wrote a excellent, excellent article, and I implore everybody to go read it, just kind of questioning some of the things about Johnny Manziel when it comes to his pocket presence. Can he read defenses? Can he recognize defensive fronts? Is he going to be able to, you know, make calls at the line of scrimmage? Is he going to be able to be a guy that can hang in the pocket and do, you know, make plays? Or is he always going to be one of those guys that when, you know, he freaks out or when the play breaks down, rather than, you know, take a sack or throw the ball away, is he going to try to make a play with his feet and end up getting hurt a la RG3? I'm just of the belief from everybody I've heard and talked to that when you've got a football guy like that, and Bill O'Brien, being the quarterback guru that we've been sold on, that he allegedly is, doesn't that seem like the perfect marriage? Doesn't that seem like you want a football-first guy? Johnny Manziel's the quintessential student when it comes to being a football player. He's a football-first guy, all right, when it comes to being on the field. And, again, off the field, I feel confident that he's going to be able to make that adjustment. He's going to be able to be, going to be able to handle the limelight. You're going to get tutored by Ryan Fitzpatrick, who I don't think anybody's going to question his intelligence. He's probably, at this stage of his career, a better mentor than he is an actual quarterback. If you got to plug him in, I think he's probably, he's good for 4 or 5 games. I don't think anybody's going to deny that. If he ends up being your full-time starter, yeah, you're probably going to win 6 or 10 games. You might only win 6 or 10 games if you got, or excuse me, you might go 6 and 10 if you got Johnny Manziel in the mix. But I don't think you can do your, I don't think you're going to do any worse. Then, I mean, I know our boy Mel Kiper's got Teddy Bridgewater falling to the first pick of the second round. I want no part of Teddy Bridgewater. If you can't play well, if you can't throw the ball well at your pro day, I mean, did anybody see some of the throws he made during his pro day? Ducks, okay? Ducks. If you have a problem at pro day when you have no defense against you and everything's scripted and you still struggle, yeah, how's that going to work in the NFL? All right, probably not too well. By the way, update OKC 14, Memphis 3. I'll give you my Rocket prediction here in a little while. Johnny Manziel strikes me as the kind of guy who he's going to be able to take it. He's going to be able to handle all the responsibilities of being a franchise quarterback, being a number one pick. You can nurture him along. You can throw him in a la Russell Wilson. We forget. This team has a good running game. This team has a good offensive line when everybody's healthy. Okay? This team's got some weapons on offense. So this idea that all of a sudden you're just throwing him to the Wolves, all right, this isn't Jacksonville you're throwing him to. And one of the things that I'm really anxious to see in this 2014 NFL season, I know a lot of people want to compare this team, it could have the kind of turnaround that the Kansas City Chiefs did last year. And I don't think that's far-fetched at all to believe, because I think what we're going to find out this year, and we saw this 2 years ago with the Saints, when you didn't have Sean Payton, and then, of course, last year you did, and you made a playoff run, and it was a much different football team, is that the one thing we know about the NFL is coaching is probably more important in the NFL than in any other professional sports league. And I think what we're going to find in 2014 versus what we saw the last 2 years is you're going to have a better coached football team. We know what your number one guys are going to do. We know what the Andres are going to do. We know what the Dwayne Browns are going to do. We know what the Chris Myers are going to do. I know I've been hard, and I know I've been very critical of Arian Foster in the past. Something in my gut tells me Arian's going to have a good year this year. I don't know what it is. I have a feeling, maybe with all the drama that he's gone through over the last year and a half, all the criticism, because this is a guy who 2 years ago was bulletproof. I have the feeling this year that he's going to come back with a vengeance. I don't know what it is. Just something in my gut tells me you're going to see an Arian Foster kind of return to what we saw from him a few years ago. So I expect to see a good Arian Foster. You're going to have Devere Posey another year healthy. Keyshawn Martin, I don't know about him. I could probably do without him. All right. DeAndre Hopkins, who was probably, probably your most underutilized, offensive weapon last year. I expect him to get more reps this year. Obviously, Andre Johnson, I don't know how much more you can expect him to play at the kind of level he has, but there's no reason to think that he's going to take a huge dip. The aforementioned, Ryan Griffin, I expect him to take that leap again this year, you know, year one to year two. Garrett Graham, provided he can stay healthy, I think he's going to be just as good, if not better, than what we saw at Owen Daniels this past season, as long as he can stay on the field. So I feel good, and of course, again, a lot of it's going to come down to that offensive line. What are you going to get? Again, I think if David Quisenberry is healthy, he's going to be your left guard. Can Brendan Williams take over that right tackle spot? Do they go out and get one in the draft? I would not be surprised if they do. And then I think you're going to go with Ben Jones, that right guard, or excuse me, you're probably going to go with Ben Jones, who's going to be your backup center. Maybe he's going to play a little swing guard action, but I think you feel good about Brandon Brooks at that right guard spot. So I think from an offensive line standpoint, you feel good right now. Of course, it's only April, so of course we all feel good about things, and we haven't had the draft yet, but I think this team is closer to being better than people think. I mean, listen, there's holes. Every team's got holes year in and year. I mean, how, would you rather be the 49ers right now? I mean, that team's a mess right now. Now, you could also say, too, they've got a quarterback, so you feel good about things. Bringing it all back, I just look at what this football team has. I look at, you need a guy. You need to change kind of the philosophy. You need to change the mindset. Now, obviously, you're going to do that with Bill O'Brien. I said this on Twitter, and people thought I was absolutely insane. Some people thought I was drinking. I was not because it was late at night. I firmly believe this, and I'm not drinking tonight. I've had no kind of herbal influence. I firmly believe that you could have a Bill O'Brien, Johnny Manziel, could be your next Bill Belichick, Tom Brady. Marinate on that. Okay? So there you go. There's plenty more to get to. That's just my thoughts, rambling as they might be. But I think you need a guy who brings all the intangibles of a leader, a winner, and somebody who the moment is not going to be too big. And that's the problem we've seen with this Texans football team over the last 2-3 years. They didn't have a quarterback. They didn't have certain key players who could handle the moment. All right? There's nothing to indicate that Johnny Manziel can't handle the moment. Is health and size a concern? That's a concern with any NFL player as far as I see it. All right? I mean, do you want him back there being a punching bag? Of course you don't. All right, but again, I think with Bill O'Brien's tutelage, with what he's got going on, with Johnny Manziel's smarts, I think with those two things in play and the weapons that you already have around him, I don't think it's going to be quite the gauntlet that everybody makes it out to be. I don't think, yes, is the size ideal? No, it's not. But what do you want, Blake Bortles? You want Jimmy Garoppolo or whatever, you know, Jeannie Garoppolo's son? I don't know. No, I don't. I want a guy who's won at the highest level. That is Johnny Manziel. Yes, he's lost a few games. Yes, he, you know, went 4-4, 0-4 against ranked teams or whatever it was, or not ranked teams, but, you know, against the SEC was. I don't care. Okay? I don't care. That defense was historically bad. It was in the bottom of almost every major category in the SEC last year. Go check it out for yourself. I looked at it the other day. All right? That defense was atrocious. All right? Johnny Manziel, to me, gives you everything this team has been lacking over the last few years and gives you your quarterback for the next 10 to 15 years, because guess what? You don't get a chance to get a guy like him that often. Trust me, we'll hear more about my boy Johnny Manziel. But we're going to get into more, too, over the next few weeks as we lead up to the draft. The second, the third, the fourth, the fifth guys that you can go after. But like I said, man, you're playing with house money in some of these rounds. And when you're sitting there, come on, 33rd pick, you're basically getting a first rounder. You know, first pick of the third round, you're basically getting another second rounder. All right, so, you know, you use these right with Bill O'Brien, with Rick Smith. All right, Rick Smith's shown the ability to go get guys, get good guys in the late to mid rounds. I'll be interested to see what he does this year in the draft. But again, I'm on the record as saying Johnny Manziel or bust. You heard it here. All right, let's transition to a little Rockets. All right, the Houston Rockets. Before we do that, real quick, go see my boy BK at Prison Break Tattoos. You guys know from back in the day when I said the Astros are playing, right? Does anybody know? Does anybody care? Okay, apparently the George Springer kid's playing. How about this? Only the Astros can bring up their most touted prospect of the last however many years and then screw his name up on the big board. That's your Astros for you. But you guys know about a year or so ago last season, actually around this time, I made a bet on the air that if the Astros lost 100 games or more, I would get a Astro logo tattooed. Well, of course they did. And, of course, where'd I go do it at? One Prison Break Tattoos. Go check them out. Prison Break Tattoos are on Facebook. Go see my boy BK. Tell him your boy Freddie D sent you by. All right, Rockets. I said at the beginning of this at the beginning of the basketball season, I had the Rockets going to the Western Conference Finals and actually getting out of the Western Conference Finals and playing the Heat in the Finals Conference, the NBA Finals, and then losing to the Heat. I said that too with the idea that the San Antonio Spurs, after the way things ended last year for San Antonio, I just didn't see them bouncing back this year, not because of. I just felt like because of age and the way that they were 28 seconds away from an NBA Finals. I mean, they should have won the Finals last year. I mean, I still, you know, the one thing that kind of gets overlooked in that Game 6 win that, you know, Ray Allen hits that huge three in the corner and is able to win they win the game after that. Why Greg Popovich took Tim Duncan out in that play, because if you remember that play, Chris Bosh was able to get the rebound over, you know, two shorter San Antonio Spurs, kicks it out to Ray Allen, boom, he hits the three, game over, thanks for playing. If Tim Duncan's in the game at that moment, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the Spurs, we're talking about the dynasty, we're talking about the greatest team of all time, maybe, blah, 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 blah. Instead, we're talking about the Heat. We mentioned the Eastern Conference earlier, how bad it is. We're pretty clear after watching what the Pacers just did. I don't know. I've never seen a team implode the way the Pacers have this year. I mean, that's for as good a basketball as they played at the beginning of the year. For what's happened since the trade deadline, I mean, is Evan Turner that bad of a guy or was Danny Granger that important of a guy? A guy that hardly ever played over the last 2 years. Was he that big of a locker room influence that this whole team has just imploded? Apparently it has. They lose today, the Atlanta Hawks. So ultimately, not that it was going to make a difference anyway, but I still think the Miami Heat are going to take care of business. They're going to be out of the Eastern Conference, not that anybody cares. Western Conference. Here's the thing about the Rockets. All right. You know what you're going to get out of Dwight Howard. You pretty much know what you're going to get out of James Harden. You're going to shorten your bench. Yeah, you're going to have some guys come in, maybe a Francisco Garcia, maybe an Omar Caspi, you know, maybe make an appearance, and you know, maybe they'll shoot the lights out of the ball one night, give you 12, 15 points where you don't expect them to, and, you know, they help, you know, they give you those points off the bench that end up helping you win a ball game. All right? You're going to have that every now and again. But one of the things I was watching Harrison Barnes talk about after the game today, about the difference in his second year in the playoffs this year versus how things were last year. And just, you know, he knew, you had an idea of just how physical things were, the intensity, just everything that goes into playoff basketball. You don't worry about that with James Harden, a little bit maybe. You hope he plays some defense. Hilarious piece on Deadspin about how bad his defense is this year. And James Harden, you can't throw him in. I mean, he's a superstar. I mean, you know, from a notoriety standpoint, but from a superstar ability, he might be he's probably the third best offensive player in the NBA. But from an all-around game, I mean, he's not even the top 10 because his defense is that bad. I mean, don't sell me on the idea that he's an all-around superstar because the guy didn't play defense. And I know the NBA, for anybody that saw that 30 for 30, I know we're a far cry from what the NBA used to be like, but come on, dude, play a little bit of D. He didn't even do that. He's going to have to do something in this NBA playoffs if this team's going to make a run. They take care of business against Portland. They're the better team. They're deeper. They took care of business against the Portland Trail Blazers this season, you know, during the regular season. I like them. It's at home. There's no excuse for why you don't beat the Portland Trail Blazers in the first round of the playoffs. Now, you being the number 4 seed, you're going to have to play San Antonio in the first round. All right. I just don't see them beating San Antonio. I get that they swept the season series from them this year. I understand all that, but let's not forget that the San Antonio starting five played the fewest minutes of any starting five in the NBA. That was done on purpose. All right. You know what Greg Popovich is all about. He's all about mind games. He's all about getting his guys ready. This team's, I mean, it's a machine. They know what they're doing, and this is their time to shine. We always hear about teams and the Heat were able to do it this year. I mean, good teams coast at certain, I mean, you got 82 games. There's no way you're just going to go balls to the wall for 82 games. You got to, you know, and the good teams know when, you know, I know some people don't believe in the whole light switch and it's hard to just turn a switch on, but good teams can do that. I really believe that. Some teams, maybe if you're laboring, but when you've got true tried, tested veterans, it may take a game, it may take a half, it may take three quarters, but eventually it does get done. Is anybody convinced that McHale's going to be able to out-coach Greg Popovich? Think about that. Of course he's not. Of course he's not. So he's not going to out-coach Greg Popovich. I've always been a little leery of Kevin McHale's in-game adjustments. I've always been leery of his plays coming out of a break, coming out of a timeout. The team's gotten better. I mean, you don't win 52 games being, you know, 50 however many games they won this year being a slouch. You don't get the number 4 seed in the Western Conference, which was, you know, a legitimate conference unlike the Eastern Conference this year. But there's just the matchup. The point guard position is going to be a killer. All right. Yes, P. Bev is nice, but I don't know that you can be an elite team with Patrick Beverley as your starting point guard. I really, really don't. Yes, he's an important part. He's a hustle guy. He plays great defense. He's a great perimeter defender. And I understand that in a half court game, that's going to be important. But does anybody really think he's going to out-duel Tony Parker? Because I certainly don't. Now, the question's going to be, are you going to get what you're going to get out of Mr. Duncan? Are you going to get what you're going to get out of Ginobili? All right, because Ginobili had a atrocious playoffs last year and was even worse in the finals. But with the way that, to me, this is their final run. Okay, this is their swan song. This is the, we're putting it all out here. This is our, you know, let's do one more run for the guys, and after this, everybody's going to part ways. There's something about this final Spurs team that this is kind of just the way it feels like to me. This is their last hurrah. I don't think there's any way you can ratchet these guys up for another run. And I know as well as Oklahoma City's played, there's just something about this San Antonio Spurs team to me that this is it. They're putting all their chips in, all right? They're taking all their beta blockers. They're taking all their Centrum Silver. This is it. And again, this team continues to find ways to infuse younger players in. They've done a great job of it again this year. And, you know, you got Kawhi Leonard another year older, okay? Danny Green has accepted the role and continues to excel. So I expect, I'm telling you, I feel like with this Spurs team, this is their final last run, hoorah, whatever the hell you want to call it. I just don't see the Rockets getting past the Spurs. And if you lose to the Spurs, I'm okay with that. I mean, I really, really am. Now, if you get blown out, if you lose 4 games in a row, if you get swept, then yeah, you scratch your head and say, okay, is this, that's not quite how we expected the season to end. If you go down in 6 games, 7 games, whatever it is, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. And if you beat the Spurs, I'll tell you what, I'll put it to you this way. If the Rockets can beat the Spurs, you're going to the finals. Simple as that. Because if you beat the Spurs, you're not getting beat by the Thunder. It just ain't going to happen. And the Clippers are the Clippers. Last I checked, it still said the Clippers across their jerseys. You saw what they were about earlier today. I just don't see the Clippers being a formidable task, even though my boy Elie Bajani does. He's got them beating the Rockets in the conference finals. I just don't see it happening. I really, really don't. So I like the Spurs to make it to the finals. I like them to win it this year. I really, really do. I like the Spurs to win it in 6 games. I think they get revenge for the way things ended. They win their, well, I guess it would be what, their 5th NBA title with that trio. And then, Tony Parker wasn't there for the first run or whatever it was, or maybe it was Manu, but it would be anyway, it'd be Tim Duncan's 5th title and it'd be Greg Popovich's 5th title. They win, and then you're going to see that team slowly start to break up. Yeah, I think Tim Duncan retires. I mean, hell, the guy's been playing in the league forever and a day. Maybe Ginobili finally retires, although I think they signed him to a 2-year, 3-year, $27 million. Gave him silly money, whatever it was, after the way he played last year. But I just think, again, this is it for the San Antonio Spurs. They find a way to get it done. They beat the Miami Heat. And then, like I said, they all ride off into the sunset. And I don't think anybody feels bad if the Houston Rockets are able to get beat by the San Antonio Spurs, and the Spurs go on to win a championship. And if they do, if the Rockets are able to beat the Spurs, then yes, I like them to go to the finals, but then I like the Heat to win it all. All right, so last but certainly not least, those are that's my NBA prediction. Last but certainly, do I have anything to drink around here? I mean, good God, I'm talking 800 miles an hour. Bear with me one second. Here we go. This is live. This is a live podcast, boys and girls. This is a live podcast. All right, so
I've been watching a lot of CNBC, as I mentioned earlier. And has anybody seen the show Money Talks? Of course you have. Apparently, when you're giving sports advice, sports betting advice, just if you can come up with any kind of bullshit, you're fine. I mean, people really buy that stuff. I think if I can't get back on the radio, I think I might know what I'm going to do next. Just give silly, goofy information to unsuspecting people on betting games, because that's basically what Steve Stevens does. I mean, listen, I'm not knocking the guy. He's able to make money doing this. He's got a TV show out of it. I mean, this guy's making more money than I am right now, so I'm not mad at him for that. But I'm just, you watch this and you see the reasons why. For instance, last night, I was watching it on HD, or excuse me, on demand, and it was the most recent episode, and he was telling this guy to put $30,000 on Louisville, who was a 28-point favorite against UConn. And the reason he told the guy to bet Louisville was because UConn had fired their head coach and their new coach was garbage and they were primed for an ass kicking. That's it. That's it. So don't be surprised, ladies and gentlemen, if you see Fred Davis Sports, where you can just call me up and I'll give you absurd reasons as to why you should bet certain teams. I think the Rockets are going to win tomorrow. Why? Because they've got whiter jerseys and they just want it more. So there you go. Take that bet to the bank all day. That's a Fred Davis lock of the week. The Rockets are going to win. Why? Because their jerseys are whiter and they want it more. So just take that for what it's worth. Boys and girls, it's been real. The first ever Fredcast is in the books. I apologize if it rambled at times. I apologize if you didn't like it. I apologize if you listened to the entire thing. Thank God for you. God bless you. I've got a Malaysian plane to go find real quick, and I haven't had a chance to talk to anybody about this. The Malaysian plane. How does a freaking plane just disappear? That is what I'd love to know. How a plane just disappear, and I'm of the belief that I don't think it crashed. I don't think it did. I think it's flying somewhere right now. Who knows? And the one question that nobody seems to want to answer, and I've posed this on Twitter. I would love to ask the experts at CNN this. Why have we not asked Vladimir Putin? All right? He's taken everything else. He's taken everything else. What's to stop him from taking Malaysian Flight 370. That's all I'm asking, man. Nobody seems to want to answer that. I'm asking the hard-hitting questions, ladies and gentlemen, and I want answers. And if you know where the Malaysian plane is, at the Freddie D. So this has been the Fredcast, the first ever premiere. I guess that's kind of redundant, isn't it? I mean, a premiere can only be the first time ever. You can have like a second premiere. This is the premiere of the Fredcast presented by CTD Labs. Once again, go check out my boy Kenny Matthews and his crew over at ctdlabs.com. If you like to work out, if you're trying to get back in shape, hey, we're not far away. I mean, hell, it was hot as hell today. We're close to that time of year, guys, where you got to take your shirt off. You got to look good for the ladies, okay? I mean, so if you're going to do that, get your mind right, get your body right. Go to Nutrition Depot. Go to ctdlabs.com. Go hit my boy up on Twitter, at ctdlabs, and find out the latest and greatest in supplements. There's a lot to choose from, and they'll get you right for the summer. I'm at the Freddie D. You can go to thefreddied.wordpress.com. That's my new website. I'm starting to put some stuff on there, so check it out. By the way, this Thursday and Friday upcoming, I will be guest hosting on The Rush. The Rush, not The Drive, The Rush, with my man Dave Tepper on 97.5, ESPN 97.5. Looking forward to that. That show's on from 12 to 2, Monday through Friday. But again, I'll be sitting in for Jerome Solomon, who's going to be covering the Rockets in Portland. So he'll be out there, so I'll have a chance to sit in with my boy Dave Tepper and do that. Looking forward to that. So make sure to tune in. And make sure to tune in to 97.5 anyway, but definitely do it on Thursday and Friday. So at the Freddie D, thefreddied.wordpress.com. Check it out. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. Good night. God bless.